Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It is the 6th of September 2012 here in Japan. It is still the 5th of September back in the United States, where I'm joined on the line by Mark H. Gaffney, the author and researcher behind such books as 9/11 Mystery Plane and The Vanishing of America, and also the newer Black 9/11 Money, Motive, and Technology, available from Trineday Press at trineday.com. Mark Gaffney, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us today.
It's good to be with you, James.
All right. Well, it is coming up to... good. Well, it is coming up to the 11th anniversary of 9/11 here in the next several days. So over that time frame, I'm sure we're going to be subjected to a lot of information about 9/11 once again, as we often are around this time of year. And of course, we'll be seeing a lot of the mainstream media take on 9/11 and its significance, especially with this election cycle playing out in America right now. But I'm sure that one of the topics that will not be covered in any great depth in the mainstream coverage is the topic of the financial aspects of 9/11. And there's a lot of information to talk about when we talk about this. But as the old dictum goes, for any criminal investigation, you have to follow the money. And that's something that very, very few people have been doing in their research on 9/11. So I'm glad to see that that you've been doing so much research on that. And once again, I will recommend Black 9/11 to people out there who haven't read it yet, because there is a lot of information in here on the financial aspects of 9/11. So, Mark, just generally speaking, what would you say to people who are interested in investigating the money trail of 9/11?
Well, they couldn't start at a better place than with my book, because it's so heavily documented. They could just go to the source material and start digging into that, because there are always areas that you can expand on. I didn't cover everything by any stretch. I tried to boil it down, and there's so much material that... And what I found is that I was just scraping the tip of it, you know, I mean, the tip of the iceberg. There's a vast amount of stuff we don't know, and I think a lot of stuff could be accessed through the open source media material, the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, those kind of sources.
Well, that's exactly right. Well, let's talk about the financial investigations that have or haven't taken place and what we do or don't know about them. And of course, the one that most people have probably heard of but don't know very much about in detail is the investigation into the put options that were put on various stocks, not only the airlines, but also some of the financial firms that were located in the World Trade Center, which had put options placed against them prior to 9/11. And there's a lot of information that's come out over the years, but still a lot that we don't know. Let's talk about those put options and how they play into this.
Well, I looked at this in my book in a chapter about insider trading. And there's no mistake that people had inside knowledge and they were trying to make money on the, you know, off the attack. And the number one company where the most put options was United Airlines, but Marshall McLennan was second, and that was one of the 38 companies on the Securities and Exchange Commission list. They had a list of 38 suspect companies, and Marshall McLennan is especially curious also because there were so many coincidental connections with Marshall McLennan and the Greenberg Empire. Marshall McLennan was based in Building 1, in fact, took the direct hit from the first plane, American Airlines 11, supposedly piloted by Mohammed Atta, although I don't think he was actually flying the plane. I argue in my book that remote access and control technology had come of age just before 9/11, and this was probably used. I argue that it was used. And of course, that would mean that Mohammed Atta didn't really fly the plane into the tower. He was basically out of the loop and just sitting there like a victim. He was also a victim in the cockpit. You know, the perpetrators were flying the plane, or probably uploaded a different flight plan that was designed to fly the plane into the tower. And there was probably a transmitter in the tower at the point of impact that was guiding the plane in. But so Marshall McLennan figures prominently in all of these coincidences around the World Trade Center collapse, or the World Trade Center impacts and collapse, and also with the put options and with the evidence for financial crimes. Richard Grove was was another, you know, gave testimony on this, and he's yet another source that linking Marsha McLennan to possible financial crimes. I think, you know, you can't ignore, there's been very little discussion about Marsha McLennan's put options, but they were the second most put options.
That's exactly right. And for people out there who don't know about that Marsha McLennan story that Richard Grove was telling, let's talk about the computer software he was talking about that may have been used on 9/11 to facilitate trades that that flew under the radar.
Well, this was a custom software that his company was a liaison between his software company and Marsha McLennan. They inked a contract, I think it was in 2000. This was a rushed job. They worked on it 24/7, and I think the deadline was supposed to be July the 15th, 2001. This was designer software that his company had never done before. They were charting new territory, breaking new ground, and it was to link Marsha McLennan to its to a number of other companies, and that we don't really know who they were. But Richard Grove thinks that these links may have been used to launder huge amounts of money, and we don't know what else, in the hours before, maybe even during 9/11. So this was a designer software that had never been created before, that was ordered specifically, especially by Marsha McLennan, and was finished and installed just before 9/11.
Now, sorry. One of the things that forensic investigators might say about this is that, well, we can always detect traces within the hard drives of various computers of whatever activity has gone on within them. So if there was some sort of trading that was happening on 9/11, some anomalous trading, it would have been picked up in the hard drives. But there's an interesting story about the hard drives that were recovered from the World Trade Center themselves that most people don't know about. Let's talk about that.
That's right. And I don't know if we're talking about some of those hard drives might have been from Marsha McLennan. We don't know, because that investigation basically went away. It just was buried. It dropped off the edge of the planet. There were reports in December of 2001 in Reuters and CNN about this hard drive recovery effort. Apparently a couple of U.S. Telecommunications companies contracted for this German company named Convar to use this proprietary software using some kind of laser technology to recover data from these damaged hard drives that were recovered from the World Trade Center. And it's amazing that they pulled these hard drives out of that rubble pile, and they actually were able to recover 100% of the data on everyone they looked at. That was the initial report. And those scientists or technicians or whoever that were doing this recovery work, they were very suspicious, because they believed that they had uncovered evidence of unexplained financial transactions, you know, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars worth. And just I think they had already at that point examined 38 drives, and they had a whole, you know, a lot more they were going to look at. And then suddenly this thing just dropped out of sight. So we don't know what happened.
Very, very strange how that happens. Well, earlier you mentioned the Greenberg Empire, talking about Hammer and Hank Greenberg of AIG. So let's talk a little bit about him and what that connection might be to 9/11.
Well, AIG, under Hank Greenberg, actually bought up the CIA of Wall Street, Kroll, this company that did security work. And it had gone bankrupt, and I think it was in 1993 that AIG saved it, and they basically bought it. And then it became an AIG affiliate, and Kroll was taking orders from that point on from Hank Greenberg, and they also had the security one of the security contracts for the World Trade Center. I think the contract was to upgrade security at the World Trade Center, and that contract extended right up until the day of the attack. So they had access to all the buildings, and one of the Kroll executives was Howard. I think his name was Jerome Howard. He was Rudolph Giuliani's head of his Office of Emergency Management, I believe it was called, and they had a crisis center in Building 7. And, you know, this thing was had blast windows and had its own air ventilation system. I mean, it was complete, state-of-the-art. And yet it was abandoned on 9/11.
And yes, they spent millions of dollars carefully situating it in Building 7 and then abandoned it on the very morning when it was most needed, shortly before the building collapsed directly into its own footprint. An interesting coincidence. Well, all of this brings up so many different unresolved issues, and unresolved because the investigations into them either were canceled or never completed, or the results were never made public. Even the SEC investigation into the put options that we mentioned earlier was eventually that entire investigation and all of its records were destroyed as part of routine record keeping, so that the SEC no longer has the records that they came up with in their own investigation. And all of these things point to a sort of pattern of destruction of evidence. Do you think we'll ever be able to come to the bottom of this financial money trail when it comes to 9/11?
I think we'll be lucky if we get to the bottom of it. However, it's quite possible somebody might come over to the truth movement, some insider who stumbles upon or has some kind of insider knowledge about this, might come forward. You never know. That's possible. But you mentioned the pattern. Yes, there certainly is a pattern, because the very same thing that happened, or you know, on 9/11 also happened in Oklahoma City, where it's my understanding that just as in Building 7, they had stored the records for Enron and many other investigations into corruption and financial crimes that the SEC was looking into, and all that was destroyed. It's my understanding from this new film, Noble Truth, that the records for Whitewater were stored in the Mura building in Oklahoma City, and possibly evidence about the MENA operation. You know, they were smuggling. This was set up by the CIA to train pilots during the Contra War in the 1980s, and according to various witnesses, they were taking arms down to the Contras, and they were returning with drugs and drug money that was being laundered through a bank there in Little Rock, Arkansas. So the same pattern.
That's right. And just for the record, that documentary is A Noble Lie at anoblelie.com. But yes, definitely exposing some of the similarities between what took place at OKC and 9/11 with the Enron records and WTC-7. So let's step back for a moment to take a look at the big picture here, because of course the 9/11 Commission final report famously said that they were never able to come to the bottom of the financing of the attacks or how the money was funneled to these alleged hijackers, but that ultimately that question is of little practical significance, and that is a direct quote, little practical significance, which is a statement that on its face is so absurd that I don't think anyone who reads it could read it with a straight face. What do you make of that statement, and what do you make of the unwillingness of any level of either the government or media to look into the financial aspects of 9/11? What does that really say about the so-called investigation?
Well, you know, what really rankles me, James, is the fact that the media allowed them to get away with this. Nobody asked any questions. You know, I mean, this is just so silly, it's ridiculous. There were 38 companies that were on the SEC suspect list, and yet only a couple of them are mentioned in the 9/11 Commission report, and they did a very most superficial job imaginable of you know, covering this, in fact, you know, whitewashing it. A couple of paragraphs in that 500, 600 page report on this. So, I mean, they hardly touched it at all, and, you know, the press let them get away with this. And this report, I think the 9/11 Commission report was even nominated for, what, a National Book Award or a Pulitzer Prize or something. I mean, you know, it's the same old thing, you know, unless they repeat it.
Well, let's turn to another aspect of your investigation that is particularly interesting. At one point, you're talking about some of the potential targets of who was really targeted on 9/11 and potentially why they were. And you note that 41% of the casualties that took place in the World Trade Center were employees of brokerage firms, which is interesting in and of itself. But you go on to talk about what you call one of the biggest mysteries of 9/11, which is what happened to Building 6. What can you tell us about Building 6 and why this is such a mystery?
Well, I looked at 6. This was mentioned in E.P. Heidner's paper, his 58-page paper. And, yeah, I found this very interesting because there was an interagency task force based in Building 6 that was involved in money laundering investigations. And Heidner believed that that may have been one reason that Building 6 was targeted, because they probably also had records in there stored. And then in 2009, we had another story, about Building 6, when this FEMA videographer went public with this just outrageous story, about how he had actually gone down into the ruins of Building 6 right after the attacks with a team of other FEMA people. And he was a trained FEMA photographer and videographer, and they located the vault down in the basement, down in the ruins. And they were able to, apparently the door was ajar, and they were able to get inside that vault and found that it was empty. Somebody had cleaned it out just before the attack, and we don't know what they took out of it. But that was another piece of this story, and that came out, in 2009 after Heidner had already raised the issue, and new information that just supported Heidner. And this FEMA videographer ended up, he had to leave the country. He's now, last I heard, he was in Argentina with his wife because he had raised questions and brought attention to himself and was being harassed by the U.S. government. So we've seen this in a number of cases, individuals, that were viewed as threats by the government, were targeted with harassment. He's not the only one, but there have been a number of them.
And as you note, the Building 6 really has a type of crater-like damage in it after the attacks, which is not easily explainable through just simply the collapse of the Twin Towers. What can we make of that fact?
Well, I would encourage your viewers and listeners to go up to go Google this. Just Google Building 6, World Trade Center 6, and crater, and photos or videos, and you're going to find it on the internet, at YouTube and other places. This thing had a huge crater right in the center of it, and the official story was that the debris from Building 1 actually caused this collapse in Building 6, but early on there were some photos posted on the internet that were taken from inside that crater, showing the debris in there. And there's no visible columns, and they're very distinctive. The outer wall of building of the World Trade Center Twin Towers were very distinctive outer wall there, and that would have been obvious if those columns had fallen into there. And there were not any in there that I could see, and in fact, very little debris of any kind. It looked like the whole thing had been excavated. We're talking about an enormous cavity in the center of the building. So it looks to me like some sort of explosion happened there. And when that happened, don't know. But, my guess is that it may have been demolished during the collapse of nearby Building 1 or 2 when the dust cloud was concealed in.
All right, Mark, let's take the big step back here, because, of course, we're talking about many of the anomalies about 9/11 and things we've been told about 9/11 in the intervening 11 years. And here we are at another anniversary, and it brings to mind the question about where these questions are going, because there is so much evidence now that has been destroyed or lost. And without those insiders stepping forward, we may never know the answer to some of these questions. From your perspective, what is the value in these questions now? Why is 9/11 still an important issue, and why do we need to continue this investigation?
Well, it's an important issue for the same reason that the JFK assassination is still important. There's no statute of limitations for murder. There's no statute of limits for greater crime can you imagine than the execution of a U.S. president in broad daylight, or the so-called terrorist attack staged in front of the whole world, that kills close to almost 3,000 people. I mean, it would be hard to imagine a more, spectacular crime. And given that this thing was undoubtedly an inside job, you have to wonder at the men who perpetrated this. I mean, this is the there was this fiendish act, the act of psychopaths. Coldly calculated, but still, you know, psychopaths.
So are you ultimately optimistic or pessimistic that 9/11 truth is any closer to reaching some sort of justice on this issue, or that we will be in the near future?
Well, based on my research on about the fourth plane, United Airlines 93, actually, I am somewhat, let me just say, cautiously optimistic at this point, because it looks to me like, this is a different subject, but, you know, it does answer your question. I believe there was a contingency plan, and I believe the perpetrators had to resort to a backup plan, and in the process, they exposed themselves. They took great risks, and I believe there are loose ends here, and with further research, we may be able to either contact a number of first responders who may turn out to be key witnesses, key eyewitnesses, or we may be able to show that some of the documentation was fraudulent, you know, falsified. And this is what I'm hoping, you know. There's still work to be done, but you know, cynics will say, well, they'll just find a way to marginalize this you know, latest discoveries like they have all along. But I think that as we go on, there is a momentum has been established now, and there are more and more people asking more questions about it, serious questions. And I think we just have to hope for a break. We need a break.
I think so, and it probably would serve us well to remember that even the Zapruder film didn't really come out to the public's attention until, I believe, it was almost 15 years after the JFK assassination. So there's still definitely time for other pieces of information to surface. But in the meantime, I certainly hope people will check into Black 9/11. A wealth of information on this, and as you said at the beginning, it's all documented here, so people can follow this information to the source and start their own investigation. Tell people how they can get a copy of Black 9/11.
Viewers can go to my publisher's website, trineday.com. That's T as in Tom, RINEDAY.com, and they can order it there, or they can go up to Amazon and get it, or they can go to their favorite bookstore and order it through their favorite bookstore, which I recommend.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I hope people will get their copy. So, Mark Gaffney, it is a pleasure talking to you again. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, James.